background to the what came to be known as the transition or Wende in East Germany was the development of reform movements in East Bloc countries ever since the mid-70s. Probably the most famous of these were the Solidarity movement in Poland and some of the activities of people like Václav Havel in the Czechoslovakia and other less known efforts in Hungary. These are the real, you know, heroes of all of this who really worked against all odds to try to bring about some reforms and bring the message of their plight to international attention. But through 1985, there was no indication that this was going to have any effect on Soviet policy or the policy of the nations in question. But in 1985, Mikhail Gorbachev came to power in the Soviet Union. Now, this isn't the place to go into any depth about Gorbachev or his background in the Soviet system and how he actually got there. But suffice it to say that his policies of perestroika, an opening up of the economy, his awareness that the Soviet economy was in trouble, and also the need to really moderate this international tension that required the Soviet Union to put so much of its resources into the military and so forth, did lead to significant change. And this manifested itself not just in the Soviet Union, but in Poland and in Hungary. Czechoslovakia as well. But nobody expected change to take place in the East Germany. The Honecker regime really seemed to be one of the strict strict application of Soviet principles. It had a certain amount of independence now as one of the more staunch of the authoritarian systems. And people, it was assumed that even if the Soviet Union opened up, it would stand alone, at least under the leadership of Honecker and his immediate followers. I have a quote here that the government indicated that it would not follow the new line offered by Moscow. They saw it as selling out the revolution to capitalist imperialist threats. When confronted with these changes, their response was maddening. An elderly member of the Politburo said, quote, "If your neighbor put up a new wallpaper in his house, would you feel obliged to put up new wallpaper in yours?" End of quote. So, although these changes were taking place in Russia and in Hungary and Poland, Germany seemed to be immune to Gorbachev's changes. However, events ran ahead of this government. What took place between Honecker's speech in January of 1989 and the opening in November? It is known as the Summer of Flight. What happened was that a new government started to reform in the Gorbachev spirit policies in Hungary under Kosh, like George Kosh. The government issued a policy that no refugee could be returned by force to a country where their life would be threatened. Now, when this was announced, East German, as well as other Polish and Czechoslovakian tourists who were able to go to Hungary, interpreted this as a possibility that they would be able to go to Hungary and establish themselves as refugees. And so they started to use their vacation privileges to go to Budapest. And after that, the same sort of policies were announced in Prague and Warsaw. So what you had were members of certain East European bloc countries going to other Eastern European bloc countries in order to obtain this refugee status. And through that summer, May, June, July of 1989, these embassies were inundated with refugees, many of whom were from East Germany. And you may see films or photographs of that. I don't know if any of you remember it, but these the embassy grounds were just full of these people who were climbing over the fences and getting into the embassy areas and camping out, and there became, you know, concern for hygienic problems, and people had to be fed, and it was just overwhelmed the system in each of these sites. But finally, the Hungarian government first allowed East German vacationers, quote-unquote, to cross over the border into Austria. I have here that in the first 3 days, 15,000 East Germans crossed into Austria. This was a sign that change was really possible. What was most important was that in response to Hungary's action, a Soviet government spokesman merely called it unusual. And with that indication that Gorbachev's government wasn't going to try to stop this, East Germans started to flock into Hungary, Poland, and Czechoslovakia. By September 14, some 30,000 East Germans had fled over this route. And they, again, were overwhelming the embassies in the East. And ultimately, the pressure from them caused the East German government to authorize these escapees, what they called escapees, Flüchtlinge, yeah, escapees, to go out of those embassies into the West. Their argument was that they were just letting these social undesirables out. Now, the terrifying thing for those who were involved were that the East German government required that they do so by crossing back into East German territory on special trains so that they could be officially expelled. And this was terrifying because the people who got onto those trains weren't sure if they were actually going to be expelled. And also because as these trains passed through East Germany, other people, you know, attempted to get onto them and, you know, stood and watched them go by and referred to them as freedom trains and so on and so forth. And the authorities had to fight to keep these people from getting near those trains. So there was a particularly tense period that resulted from really these Hungarian, the Czechoslovakian and Polish decisions to allow these vacationers to go out. I remember I was just going to Germany during that period as these individuals were leaving Hungary and then coming back up, and strangely enough were ending up living in West Berlin. So they were going out of Hungary and then going back up and going back into West Berlin to live. And it was almost impossible to find apartments because of that, and the West Berlin was being inundated and overcrowded with these East German escapees. Of course, they wanted to get back and get close to their family members, and being in West Berlin was the most effective way to do that. At any rate, after, let's see, 28 years, the brain drain that had been stopped by the Berlin Wall had begun again, because, of course, it was young families and professionals who were most able and willing to make the flight. Now, as this was going on, there were important developments taking place in East Germany, triggered by the awareness of things that were going on in the Soviet Union and in Hungary and Poland and Czechoslovakia, but also these escape or these vacation escapees, the summer of flight. And what you have was the coming out more and more vociferously of reform groups, principally within various Protestant churches. Most famously, Monday night services served as the catalyst for this action. And here's just a sort of sketch of some of these. On September 1st, hundreds demonstrated in front of the Nikolaikirche in Leipzig, which is still known as the central place of origin of this reform movement. Their placard saying, "Freedom to travel instead of mass flight," were ripped from them by security police. So the police are still coming down hard on them. On 11 of September, a group called the New Forum was formed. And on that night, 70 demonstrators were arrested after church services at the Nikolaikirche again. So still talking about tens, hundreds of demonstrators. But 2 weeks later, on 25th of September, 8,000 demonstrators in Leipzig demanded the recognition of New Forum as a legitimate political organization. So you have 8,000 demonstrators there. And by the 2nd of October, there was a demonstration of 25,000 in Leipzig. All right, so within 2 months, you've gone from just a sprinkling of very brave but isolated reformers to demonstrations of up to 25,000, which the state's police were still putting down violently, and mass arrests were taking place. Right. Now, all of this is incredibly ironic, because in October of 1989, the East German regime was preparing to celebrate its 40th anniversary, so quite a landmark. 7th of October 1989 was going to be the celebration of the 40th anniversary of East Germany. So they were preparing all the classic parades, meetings, speeches that were part of East German Soviet propaganda. And by the way, Gorbachev was scheduled to appear. And for those of us who were in Berlin at the time, it was tremendously symbolic. These things were broadcast on television, and on the surface, it seemed like, despite all these things that were going on in the background, there was still general support for the regime, because they were able to put on this propaganda show of people marching by Honecker, marching by Gorbachev, doing all the things that had been done traditionally to mark East German patriotism. But if you looked closely, you could see that, for instance, as people were marching by the podium where Gorbachev was singing, they were yelling out, "Help us, Gorby." And Gorbachev did help to a certain degree, because, although not too blatantly, he made it clear that he too was awaiting changes in the GDR. Because in his speech, he said almost directly to Honecker, "He who comes late is punished by life." And then, according to a communist tradition, he put a kiss on the lips of Honecker. And all the newspapers in the West, anyway, ran that as a kiss of death, that he was, essentially saying, "Honecker, your time is up, and you need to move forward, or you're going to be punished by life." Now, what people didn't see in the Western, couldn't see in the Western coverage of this, or in the coverage of it at all, was the fact that behind the scenes, demonstrations were for reform were occurring, and that thousands were calling for reform, trying to get Gorbachev's attention, and that they were attacked by security forces, thousands being arrested. As just at the very same time that those official commemorations were taking place. 2 days later, in Leipzig, on the 9th of October, 50,000 demonstrators went out, standing up against what they call the hypocrisy of the 40th anniversary celebrations. At this point, they were the government was certainly not about to bend, at least not officially. In fact, plans were in place that were referred to as the Tiananmen, or the Chinese option, because previously in that year, the bloody repression of the demonstrators in Tiananmen Square had taken place. According to the spy chief, Marcus Wolf, there was a written order from Honecker for a Chinese solution. It could have been worse than Beijing. So, as far as the hardliners in the regime itself were concerned, this reform movement was not going to be allowed to continue, let alone have effect. But we know now that at that time, Soviet officers made it clear to East German authorities that they would not order their troops to interfere. And this is the key symbol that, and it probably did go back to Gorbachev, although I've not read the specific details of this, but that the Soviet army was not going to back up a Chinese solution on the part of the East German leadership. And this really, in a sense, was the key, the pivotal decision, probably coming from the top of Soviet authorities, that meant that the revolution would unfold in a peaceful rather than a violent way. From that point, the demonstrations grew larger and larger. By the 16th of October, crowds of 200,000 were gathering in Leipzig, all pressuring for the resignation of Honecker and reform of the SED. And on October 18, Honecker did offer his resignation, quote, for health reasons, end quote. Now, Honecker was an old and made perhaps sickly leader. So his resignation was probably pro forma and might have taken place after the 40th anniversary anyway. Hard to say. But it wasn't the complete opening that the demonstrators were hoping for. I'm not going to go into all of the details of this, but initially the person who replaced him was a younger guy named Egon Krenz, who from the outside looked refreshing enough, but to insiders was just an indication that they were going to try to keep to pawn this off as a transition, but maintain for the most part the same policies. He had been a head of internal security forces. He was implicated in the fixing of elections. He had said things about using the communist option, the Chinese option to deal with the demonstrators. He tried to back off on these things, but they weren't going to have any of it. On the 4th of November, 1989, a million persons turned out in East Berlin for a demonstration calling for freedom of the press, freedom of opinion, and free elections. It's in that week that it's probably not the most important aspect of the transition that was taking place, but certainly the most visible indication of change took place. The Politburo met to try to bring about a certain number of reforms in response to these changes. And on November 9, they came out with a series of decisions that were made. And none of these were earth-shattering in and of themselves. Basically, bureaucratic personnel changes, a list of 7, 8, 9 things that they had just discussed during the day. And in the midst of this list, perhaps point number 7 or 8, The party spokesman indicated that East Germans would be allowed to travel across their borders with visas to be issued immediately. I remember watching this press conference, and of course it's fairly famous now. After going through the whole list, one of the reporters raised their hands and said, "Well, could we go back to point number 7? Could you repeat that?" And they did, and they said, "Well, would that also apply to West Germany? West Berlin crossings?" And the spokesman sort of looked around and said, "Yeah, I suppose." And that was it. They went on to further business. Now, over the next few hours, people tried to interpret what had taken place there. There hadn't been any sort of grand announcement. There was just this sort of subtle bureaucratic offhand reference to the possibility of crossing over at the borders on demand. I remember calling back and forth to friends trying to see, asking if they had seen this, and they all had, and they wondered what it meant, and they, you know, weren't sure, we'll have to see. You know, it sounded like, though, that they said that something major had just been decided. So I decided that the place to be, if any of this was in fact an indication that they were going to open up the border crossings, was the Brandenburger Gate. We've talked about the Brandenburger Gate back there in the beginning of the 19th century and the symbolism of that as a neoclassical indication of 19th century German governance. So I thought that would be the place to go, since that really is the symbolic center of Berlin. So my wife and I went down there at about 8 o'clock after dinner and stood there. And there really wasn't that much to report. There were a few other people who felt the same way. They had lit candles in front of the west side of the wall. And they were, some were singing right-wing songs. There were some neo-fascists there calling for unification. But as we peered into the East German side, there wasn't any indication that anything special was going on. So it got to be 10, 11, and nothing was happening. And I had to get up and work on my dissertation the next morning. It was starting to get past my bedtime. So we got back on the train and went home. Well, one detail that we weren't aware of was that it was an indication that this new policy would take hold at midnight. So apparently all the same things were going on the east side. People were talking to each other, trying to interpret what this announcement had meant, or this non-announcement had meant, and were trying to decide how they were going to act. But at midnight, they went to the crossing guards and the border guards at the crossings, and you know, indicated that they knew that this decision had been made. And lo and behold, the guards opened up and let them go through. And the Berlin Wall was breached. And I'm sure you're aware of all the celebrations that took place as Westerners or Easterners flowed into the West and climbed up on the wall and spilled each other with champagne and started taking the wall apart as East German border guards stood there and watched, sometimes confused and often bemused. Well, I found out about all of this the next morning when my wife and I turned on the radio and discovered that we'd missed one hell of a party. But on the other hand, the experience that we had of going down to the city immediately that morning and seeing not so much the midnight revelers, but the average East German families with small kids coming out of the S-Bahn stations, taking their first step outside of East German territory, was very moving. I'll never forget seeing those faces beaming as they walk with their washed out East German Levi or East German denim outfits and funky looking tennis shoes, and just wandering around in happy awareness that they weren't going to have to live in that gray, rather boring world anymore. And I'll say that's essentially what one could perceive, because there's no question that what they were most excited about was the opportunity to go shopping. Now, certainly there was more to it than that, but after the first steps in Western freedom, they started to go to the shops and go to the stores, and they were given a certain amount of spending money in the next weeks, and it was amazing to watch how they just inundated all of the Western stores, buying not fancy things, very modest things, but things like fresh fruit, foods that they hadn't had access to before. I remember things like kiwis and bananas and oranges were completely sold out because they simply hadn't had those things before. So it started out with very basic elements and then progressed from there. Well, I'm an hour into this sort of summary of the East German experience, and so I'm going to stop there without going through all the details of how the transition unfolded from there, leading to ultimately the unification of Germany in October. But you can take a look at that material in Orlo, and trace the shift, which is, and the most important aspect of that is the fact that what it was initially a movement targeting reform of East Germany while maintaining their East German state very quickly became a shift toward unification of the two German states into a single German Republic. And of course, there at the time, this was very controversial, and in the long run, probably isn't, but is an indication of how Helmut Kohl and the CDU, the conservatives in the West, took advantage of the opportunity that they saw and speeded up the agenda, thus bringing about within a year something that even at the time, in the midst of this reform movement, people didn't think would happen for another 5, 10, even 20 years. The goal of the reformers was to construct a state that maintained the positive aspects of Eastern Germany, the equal social system, the freedoms of women, a lot of the social services that were existed there, while eliminating some of the more drastic aspects of the regime. There's no question that the goal was this sort of third way, with a left wing that was again trying to maintain some space between itself, the Western capitalist orientation, and the Soviet mode of communist control. In the end, though, they were simply washed away in the rush toward first economic union by through another currency reform, incorporating the East German economy into the Western economy, and then ultimately elections that led to unification in October of 1990. So once again, that romantic leftist perspective on how Germany might be something other than a Western liberal economic nation and economy was ignored, you might say.